This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
String figures, what are they? For those of you who don't know. String figures, for which the Yolngu word is maker, are patterns or designs made with a loop of string by coordinated movements of the fingers of both hands, assisted by the teeth, neck, elbow, knees and toes when necessarily. While usually executed by a single person, some require two or more players, like the marvellous two-person turtle. Let me introduce you to Frederick McCarthy's principal collaborator, Ngarawal Munungur, a Djapu woman married to Nyanyin Mamuru, one of McCarthy's male informants. She had one young child at the time. She had a remarkable knowledge of designs, and it seems that due to her work with McCarthy, she came to be known at Yirrkala by her people as the most skillful at maker djama. McCarthy found her an ideal subject with whom to work. Ngarawal was, he records, quote, shy in manner, but always happy and laughing, a most obliging and cheerful person. And I would like to acknowledge Ngarawal's daughter here in the audience today. The collection of string figures made at Yirrkala by Frederick McCarthy comprises three principal separate but complementary components. Firstly, there are 193 mounted figures housed in the Cultural Collections Division of the Australian Museum. Made with lengths of string, knotted to form a loop, the majority of the figures were fashioned by Ngarawal. The final design slipped from her hands and fixed to a cardboard or brown paper support with small pieces of tape. The support was annotated with the name of the maker, the name of the subject in English and its Yolngu name. Relevant finger positions were marked in, and sometimes the general position of the hands as well was sketched. In many of the mounted figures, especially those relating to animals, parts of the design were identified as representing specific features, head, tail, belly, etc. Ngarawal had exceptional skill such that she could perform the figures step by step in slow motion, which was invaluable for McCarthy's task of recording the sequence of manipulations by which a figure was made. And this was the second major focus of his collecting activity. These instructions were transcribed in two dedicated field notebooks. And finally, in the Australian Museum archives, there are 159 photographs of Ngarawal and two male informants, father and son, Marwalan and Wantuk Marika, demonstrating designs. At the end of the expedition, Hal Walker asked McCarthy to name the most significant contribution to the field of anthropology that the expedition had made possible. McCarthy nominated, equal with the archaeological survey that he and Frank Setzler had carried out, the collection of string figures made at Yirrkala. To quote him, a record number from one group of natives, this is the most complete study of string figures yet made in one area in Australia, and increases the total to three times as many as previously known in the whole of the continent. McCarthy's collection actually constituted one-fifth of all known string figures in the world at the time, and remains the largest of its kind, that is, collected at a single time and place from a single community. In approaching an assessment of the significance of this collection today as a legacy of the expedition, it is important, I think, to firstly understand how it was seen within its original context, in particular, why McCarthy would deem this collection one of the most significant achievements of the varied anthropological pursuits of the expedition, more important than the collections made of material culture items, better than the barks. String figures are not material objects capable of being collected in the usual sense. The whole fun of string figure making is that you always begin and end with the dumb and inert material, the loop of string. And by contrast, the constituency or place of being of string figures is in the animation of the string, its transformation through movement or manipulation. So what was McCarthy collecting and why? At first I had thought that the mounted figures in particular, turning an ephemeral, embodied, performance-based cultural practice into a fixed, stable, two-dimensional form was a peculiarly Western attempt to capture, you know, the intangible culture of another. But I found I was not quite right. The anthropological study of string figures was allied with diffusionist theory, or perhaps the diffusionist paradigm, which through means of comparative analysis of culture traits or complexes, such as string figure designs, attempted to plot cultural development through time and across geographic areas. The idea was that if the same pattern or technique was found to occur in different places, one could presume some form of contact transmission between populations. McCarthy was best known for his work in archaeology, in particular the topology of stone tools and the sequencing of rock art. His strong suit was the description, analysis, and ordering of artefacts. The Arnhem Land expedition was the one and only time McCarthy worked on string figures. Now, Professor Mulvaney has described McCarthy as having, quote, mildly diffusionist principles. The interests of the diffusionists were not in essence that different from those of contemporary scholars, tracking continuity and change in the development of Indigenous culture. But their approach was. The scale of their project, its exactitude, combining a detailed focus with an encyclopedic ambit. McCarthy stated, for example, in an article on Aboriginal material culture published in 1940, that there were problems in determining the line of demarcation between introduced and Indigenous traits that would not be, and I quote, satisfactorily settled until a complete distributional analysis had been made of all traits in Australia and neighbouring cultures. On the expedition, McCarthy was involved in collecting material culture artefacts, excavating archaeological sites, documenting rock art, and recording string figures. But no matter how we might wish to classify his various pursuits, by the material or form of what was being collected or studied, by our own disciplinary genres, I would argue there is a sense that they were all one and the same thing for McCarthy, the gathering, collecting, or describing of ethnographic facts for later analysis, additions to the database. And through this week, we've had quite a bit of discussion of scientific method, and in the history of anthropology, there is a great crossover between that and the study of human cultures. In his response to Hal Walker's question, that one regarding the most significant contribution to the field of anthropology made possible by the expedition, McCarthy gave the reasons for his selection. The archaeological survey, he said, because it was, quote, an untouched field and produced type cultures hitherto unknown. The string figures, because of the comprehensive nature of the collection, a record number from one group of natives in one area. And he gave reasons why Mountford's collection of Bart paintings did not rate. Basically, that was because collections of Barks already existed from these places, and in particular, he cites the Burnts had previously done more detailed and prolonged work at Yirrkala and Gumbalanya. So in brief, his way of thinking was that the string figures, like the archaeological survey, filled in blanks on the map, made original additions to the database. The Barks did not. Now, McCarthy's collecting practices are documented in his chronological diaries he made during the expedition. There are two aspects which come through in his diaries which are of particular note, and they are a concentration on abstract pure number and the atomization of the collecting process. So how do you collect string figures? Logically, get the person to make the figure, photograph it on their hands, then mount it on card, and then record the technique of making. However, as the diaries reveal, it did not happen this way. The three stages in the process and the three data types to which they relate were each collected at separate times. McCarthy's activity divides into distinct phases. So phase one, a two-week period from shortly after arrival at Yirrkala, in which he collects mounted specimens only, mainly with narwhal. At the end of this time, he has a collection of 90 mounted specimens, and I'd emphasise that he didn't spend even the majority of his time on the string figures during that period. So then he goes to Milingimbi, concentrating on archaeological excavations. He returns to Yirrkala, where he discovers that he has less than 2 weeks before they are due to leave for Gumbalanya. Quote, very little time for recording the string figure techniques. McCarthy spent part of the next 4 days working with Ngarrawal, recording instructions for making the string figures he had previously collected. During this period, in the run-up to their departure, McCarthy had competing demands on his time and had obviously decided to call it a day on the string figures with the 90 mounted specimens collected and 65 techniques recorded when on Saturday the 28th of August he begins writing up, that is, transcribing his findings into his notebook. Number was a currency that all the researchers on the expedition traded in. With the exception, perhaps, of the nutrition unit, pure abstract number was the measure of their work both for themselves and others. It was always the thing cited to summarise the expedition's achievements, and to an extent it continues to be so. It is telling that in his diary entry for the day that he totes, for that day, 28th of August, he totes up the numbers on the other members of the team, leaving spaces to fill for those he doesn't have to hand. Miller got his 201st fish species on the trip. Specht has 225 species of plants from Yirrkala. Dignan has species of birds on the trip, and Johnson has species of mammals. This concern with abstract number is one thing that stands out in the record of McCarthy's diaries. On hearing that the boat coming to transport their gear to Ernpalli would be delayed, the three activities of collecting, recording and writing up the string figures, which had taken place separately in McCarthy's practice up till then, are combined. He caught up on recording the outstanding techniques for the 90 mounted figures already collected, and he got new ones and recorded their techniques, all with Ngarrawal. Towards the end of this period, a little over a week, with the party's new date of departure now approaching, McCarthy's entries in his diary tell the story. 4th of September. I continued working with Ngarrawal and got the total of string figures to 173. 5th of September. In the evening, I worked with Ngarrawal and took the total to 183 string figures. 7th of September. The total now is 190. There are probably more to be got here, and I should try to get 10 more to make the 200, should time permit. In this third and final phase, McCarthy began to gather and record a new and different kind of information, what he referred to as social background or social tie-up material. And this information about customary aspects of string figure making was told to him in conversations he had with male informants, principally Wandruk Marika, his father Marwalan, and Uncle Mathaman. It concerned various prohibitions or law regarding the practice and regulations applying differentially to men, women, and children. At this time, Wandruk painted a bark for McCarthy of string figure dreaming place. And McCarthy recorded a number of narratives or myths involving string figures. One of these, an origins or creation story, related the making of string and string figures to the well-known Wagalug sisters myth cycle. And I quote, string was first made by the two Wagalug sisters. They made a record and string of all the animals, plants, and other things they saw, as well as their own activities. In the story, as he records it, there are 192 string figures mentioned, of which he notes he has collected all but 16. On his last day in Yirrkala, McCarthy escaped from packing up the camp to take photographs of the string figures. His approach to this was characteristically focused. In the 3 hours between 9 a.m. and 12, Ngarrawal made 149 figures for him to photograph. Quote, she made the next one in the time it took me to write down the name and number of the previous one. In the hour after the lunch break, she made another 40 figures. McCarthy then photographed Marwalan and Wandruk making a number of the men's figures. The larger part of McCarthy's paper in the published records of the expedition, 72 of 96 pages, consisted of instructions for making, accompanied by an illustration of the final form of each figure. So these were the instructions that he had collected from Ngarrawal. The illustrations were variously based on either the mounted figure or the photograph. So no hands means mounted figure. Hands means photograph. They were organised, as was standard practice, following a topology based on their method of construction, those made from different openings being grouped together. The written introduction to McCarthy's inventory of data starts with an acknowledgement of the role of his informants, in which they are all identified by name. He paid tribute in particular to Ngarrawal, as also in his article on string figures written for the Australian Museum magazine in 1958, and it is worth quoting from this in full. Ngarrawal proved to be a golden goose, to coin a term, a genius with a loop of string. She set a world's record which may never be broken. Of the 212 designs that I collected at Yirrkala, Ngarrawal made all but 10 and fashioned all but 6 of the 187 techniques or series of manipulations secured. Whether she made the figures slowly for recording purposes or rapidly for photography, her errors were remarkably low. Her long, slim fingers moved gracefully over the strings like a pianist's over the keys of her piano. Her astoundingly wide knowledge of the designs, sequences of manipulations and subjects is, from the technical and quantitative points of view, proof of a mastery of her craft and of the possession of highly intellectual powers of mental and manual coordination. With Ngarrawal, string figure making is an art. As well as commenting on the implications of his findings for diffusionist hypotheses, he canvassed the range of subjects found in the naming of the figures, noting that the most important source of motives lies in the natural environment, human and animal behaviour, and material culture. There were string figures for most of the things encountered in the Yolngu world. From the preceding account of McCarthy's approach to collecting the string figures, we see that for him the mounted figures were a record of the final designs, to which the step-by-step instructions for making referred. Apart from that role, they did not attract any excess value. Perhaps quite understandably, he did not value them as items of material culture. Made of industrially manufactured string, they obviously had no pretense of being authentic artefacts of Stone Age man. Most tellingly, he did not accession them into the museum's collection on his return, as he did with the other artefacts collected on the expedition. They were kept, but ended up buried under a layer of other unregistered items in the museum's stores, until unearthed by curator Stan Florek in 1988. The value of these objects today is different to what it was in 1948. Their material status is paramount to what they are and what they mean. They appear now as genuine historical artefacts of cross-cultural encounter and exchange, the product of collaboration between two individuals with different skills, an engagement between two different enculturated knowledge systems. They would not, could not, exist without the contribution of the other, of both. They retain value as a record of the practice of string figure making at that time in Yirrkala. For the visual anthropologist, the collection invites a semiotic analysis. The representational mode of string figures as made in any part of the world has not been adequately fathomed. For this purpose, the comprehensive number of the collection and accompanying data are indeed valuable. It promises the opportunity to understand their function as a meaning system. Finally, the mounted figures are aesthetically provocative objects, the product of shared time spent between McCarthy and Ngarrawal, making the string figures, sticking them down and annotating them. They hint from this remove towards another relational context of which there is no record, and that is the practice in the everyday and ceremonial worlds of Yolngu culture. McCarthy recorded the fact that string figures were used by men in ritual ceremony and their link with narrative in story or myth in the last week of his stay in Yirrkala, really in time on, but nothing further than that. The very fact of the collection's existence creates the potential for its reconnection with the community and exploration of these threads. Contrary to the expectations of McCarthy's era and even some beliefs today, string figure making continues in the Yirrkala community. And on my first trip there over the summer of 2008-2009, I recorded a contemporary repertoire of figures and tricks, some that McCarthy recorded and some that he didn't, perhaps new ones. While still known and practiced, string figure making appears not to be a strongly developed or ubiquitous as it once was. It has not been highly valued as a cultural expression by either Yolngu or Balanda. Wherever string figures sat in the order of things within the semi-traditional society of 1948, their fate was tied to the trajectory of the community's increasing interaction with the values of white society. Just as the string figures were not objects that McCarthy could collect as such, as it was explained to me, string figures are not something that you can buy and sell, so not that interesting, unlike string bags or barks for that matter. After McCarthy, no one wanted string figures from Yolngu. Unlike other cultural activities, they were not commodified as product in the contemporary economy. What significance this collection holds for the contemporary source community at Yirrkala, what they make of it, is yet to be told. McCarthy noted that his interest in string figures had stimulated enthusiasm for the making of them amongst the community, and I'm hoping that my interest may have the same catalytic effect, and not only for Yolngu. The final aim of my project is to work in collaboration with the Yirrkala community to bring the string figures out of storage and reanimate them, in part through telling their story in an exhibition context where they can be seen, appreciated, and experienced as living culture by a wide audience. And if you want to get a jump on this, you can come to the workshop tomorrow afternoon, being led by Japia Munungur. Thank you.
We have time for probably one, and don't forget, if you do have any others, and so you don't forget them, jot them down and bring them on into the final session.
Thanks, Robin. Not long before I even heard about the Arnhem Land Expedition, my mother sent up from Goulburn a little book that was string figures that we made when we were at primary school. I'd completely forgotten for my daughter to play with. Anyway, I just wondered, did you know about string figures in Groot, because in his early diaries he notes he's frustrated because the stock is stuck on the boat and he hasn't got any card to be able to fix them. Mm-hmm. So that question, but also I wanted to acknowledge Sue Varlas from the Australian Museum, who undertook the huge job of replacing the sticky tape with Japanese paper so that they still exist, because otherwise they'd all just ping off and be lost.
McCarthy had intended collecting the string figures from the outset before he left on the expedition, and interestingly, it's probably an idea that was put to him by Mountford. He had intended to collect them at Groot Island, but I mean, it wasn't something he didn't require to observe them at the places that he went. It was already in his mind. But as you point out, he was unable to do so because the cardboard was stuck on the Phoenix, and so he had, quote, nothing to stick them down on.
What's wrong with paper? Sten Florek, Australian Museum. Thank you, Robin, for your thoughtful and very interesting exploration of history and meaning of bark paintings. What struck me is that interesting parallel between the paintings on bark paintings on paper and string figures, and what Margot so beautifully presented the other day, that in the art context, bark paintings on paper were happily accepted as real thing, and yet in museum collections they were not. And when I decided to register string figures in late 80s, I was blissfully ignorant that the same process was happening in other museums where bark paintings on paper were also registered, and therefore shifting those objects from status of documentation into status of real objects. And I think that opens sort of bigger question of authenticity. But anyway, perhaps Robin would like to comment on it, or maybe someone else also would like to comment.
Well, yesterday, indeed, Stan, thanks for that. When there was the discussion about the paintings on paper and their status as art, indeed it does lead you, something like the string figures look at first glance perhaps, as not art. And yet, in the way that they're actually manufactured, as I make big play of, they wouldn't have come into being without the collaboration, if you like, of both cultures. But that's true of the works on paper, but also, you know, to an extent, the works on bark as well.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.